Good day to you. Welcome to another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Meraz. Today we're being joined by the mayor of Morehead, Mr. David Perkins, as we talk about city business. And Mr. Mayor, first of all, welcome to The Front Page. We appreciate your time.
Well, good morning on this slightly rainy morning.
Well, the one good thing about the rain is that it keeps down the threat of forest fires in our area.
It does indeed.
So we appreciate that part of it. And we'll talk a little bit about the top issue of the day. I know that the city has been discussing a tax increase, a property tax increase. And at first reading here last month, there was a passage of a plan to raise the tax by 4% of revenues.
Yes.
And so now council met earlier this week on Monday and decided to backtrack on that. Maybe if you would explain what happened there.
Well, we had the what would have been a second reading of the 4% of revenue increase. That was voted down 4-2. So the fallback on that is what we call a compensating rate, which is supposed to generate the same dollars that last year's rate did. And we had a vote there, and they tied. So I had to break the tie to get, you know, move on.
What's been the issue here? Because it seemed like outside of the two council members, Bruce Atkins and Glenn Teager, who had voted against it in the last month, that everyone seemed to be fairly united in the fact that there was a need to go with the 4% increase. But now things have changed, and why do you feel that's happened?
Some of it I'm not sure I even understand. We did have a public hearing before the council meeting, which we're required to do when we attempt to do the 4% of last year's revenue increase. We had some participants, you know, come and speak their piece. I think of the six or eight people there, two of them actually lived in the city. The rest of them are property owners. You know, they said what they said, and we, you know, explained what we were doing and why. Of course, you know, most of us don't really like tax increases, and we didn't. I didn't feel like this was a huge thing to begin with. Council decide they want to go a different direction, and that's perfectly fine.
When we talk about going to the compensating rate, which this is airing Friday, of course, you're meeting again on Wednesday, and we decided to tape this on Tuesday. But I guess what happens here is that if you go with the compensating rate, you told me something that was really interesting before we got in here this morning, that the difference between the 4% and the compensating rate really aren't that much.
It's a $10 difference on $100,000 of assessment. So if you had a piece of property that was the PVA assessed at $100,000 with the 4%, it would cost you $266. With the compensating rate, which it appears where we're headed, is $256. Now, had we actually done a full 4%, then that bill would have been $296. So, you know, we weren't getting close to a real full 4%.
When you talk about the overall difference, and I'll ask you if you know this, you talk about the difference between the revenue that would be raised by that 4% increase that had been initially passed and the compensating rate. Overall, what would be perhaps the difference there? You mentioned it would be about $10 for every $100,000 of assessed value, but have you been able to calculate how much you might have gotten had you taken the 4% as opposed to the compensating rate?
It looked like it was going to amount to about a little over $30,000 total. You know, that's substantial if that were coming out of one or two people's pockets. Of course, everybody feels like if it's coming out of their pocket, it's substantial. And that's a legitimate feeling to have. In the big picture, it really isn't a lot of money. You know, the numbers that we end up having to deal with. So it is what it is, and we'll just move ahead with what we've got.
Are you frustrated at all by this situation?
Well, I am by the way it came down. You know, I feel like council should get on board one way or the other and just move forward. You know, I shouldn't have to break a tie on something as relatively simple as this.
When people talk about tax increases, they always bring up the fact, well, it's an election year and it's harder to pass a tax increase in an election year. But you had an interesting take, I thought, about this entire matter when we spoke earlier.
You know, I guess some people are concerned about the election, but it's my view is you need to do the right thing regardless of the implications for your future. You know, if you can't stand the heat, maybe you shouldn't be in the kitchen.
Do you feel like, though, that in the end that the city will be able to live with the compensation?
Oh, we'll be fine. It's one of those things where if you do small bites along the way, you don't have to do the really big bites that really hurt people. So, you know, a nibble here, a nibble there is much less painful than a giant chunk out of your pocket.
Talking about some of the other items on the agenda that I saw, I noticed that there was a quarterly report regarding the drug-free community grant situation, and I'd seen here recently that Rouen Unite, I guess, had lost $125,000 in federal funds, I think, from that grant. Is that what this was about?
Well, the representative that normally gives us a report wasn't there. Now, Mr. Tigger, who has some interaction with that group, you know, spoke and said that they had, in fact, not received the new funding, and they would be winding down the formal operations by the first of this coming month. That, you know, there's still going to be some activity, but it's all going to be volunteer. You know, we won't have a couple of positions that are actually being paid to, you know, work this program and so forth. But it's my thoughts and understanding was it was making a difference. But, you know, the federal dollars are being squeezed out everywhere, so that's just another casualty of the bigger picture.
Yeah, you mentioned that, and Rouen Unite is losing its two full-time positions, including its director's position, and as you mentioned, they're going to a volunteer basis, which means the people that were in the full-time jobs will have to find other full-time jobs, which means that their time to be volunteers, I'm sure that they will do their best, but at the same time, it will limit perhaps their activities and perhaps the overall effectiveness, I would think, of this organization, which when you look at the drug problem of this part of the state and probably this part of the country, it's a big-time problem, and you'd like to have all hands on deck whenever possible to deal with it.
Absolutely. You know, obviously, each of us has to look out for our own well-being first. So you've got to find another job. You've got to generate income to, you know, live with. That just takes away from your abilities to do what you maybe your passion was. So it's, you know, another casualty.
Are you concerned, though, that this might allow the drug problem to perhaps grow a little bit more? And it's already out of control in many respects, I think, in some areas. But I know that a lot of folks are working to try to make a difference here. But when you take two people off the line, I mean, that only is going to make it tougher to get that job done.
Yeah, I'm not sure on a street level what impact that would have. The programs that are being discontinued or at least scaled back were more educational. And that, you know, trying to educate the young people, this stuff isn't good for you. Here's why. Here's what it'll do to you. We're just not having that ability, or we're going to have much less of it. Now, the law enforcement side of it is still, to my knowledge, very active. You know, it's either that or just throw in the towel and run. I don't think they're going to do that.
No, they won't do that. You're right. You also, I guess, had the second reading of the nuisance ordinance, and it looks like that got through okay. Maybe talk about that.
Actually, we didn't have a second
reading. You didn't? Okay.
I've been to conference last week, most of last week, in Louisville, and one of the sessions I sat in on dealt with some of that stuff. And after listening to that, I thought maybe we just need to step back and look at the whole situation much more broadly. There are three possible KRSs that we can operate under in this area. And I thought, you know, maybe we just need to not be in such a rush. We might end, if we look at it more broadly, we might end up with a better package in the long haul. So I just asked that we not consider the second reading until we had time to investigate more.
The proposal that had been passed on first reading basically toughens the law, makes the penalties a little bit harsher for those who violate the nuisance ordinance, and we talk about things like junk cars on yards and lawns that perhaps aren't mowed. So what were your concerns here after you had a chance to review the issue, and what do you think needs to be looked at and possibly adjusted?
Well, you know, we were looking at actually a fairly narrow area, even though it's modeled after another city's who has good reputation. But after hearing what the presenter in that particular session had to say, I thought this deserves more time than we've given it. So we may have better options if we look at some of these other KRSs to operate under, or we may decide ultimately that we are on the right track and just go forward. But sometimes it's smarter just to stop and look at the bigger picture.
Do you think this is something you might deal with then again in November?
It's possible, or it may even take longer than that, depending on what we discover.
This seems like a complicated issue. On the surface, it's maybe not, but as you start to dig deeper into it, there are a lot of things at play.
Well, if you're not careful in any ordinance and laws, you end up with unintended consequences. So if you don't do knee-jerky stuff, then you end up with a better law or ordinance in the long run. You don't want to beat people up unnecessarily, but you still want people to behave, you know, in a good way.
Did you deal with the Progress Hall issue? And for those who don't know it, Progress Hall used to be the City Hall a long time ago. It's actually located almost across the street from the Fuzzy Duck. If you look at the building, it says 1927 City Hall on the very top of it. It's kind of a neat building, but you talked about returning that property, re-deeding it, I guess, to downtown Moorhead. Was that dealt with?
That resolution was passed. The attorney will draw up the proper papers to transfer the ownership to downtown Moorhead. If they decide that maybe they want to do something other than operate or have that facility, they're required to dispose of it, which basically means sell it in the same way that we would. They can't just negotiate a deal. They have to offer it, you know, at public auction or sealed bids, that type of scenario, at least on the first go-round. They would have a reserve so that if it doesn't bring X number of dollars, then they would basically throw out the proposals. At that point, they could enter into negotiations with a realtor to market it. I don't know at this point exactly what they're going to do, but I'm also on that board, and we kind of felt like we didn't really want to put a lot more money into that building at this point in time. So in the coming months, we may or may not decide to dispose of it.
It's kind of a neat building, though.
It is, but it's also because of the way it's built, it's hard to do anything with because it's very narrow, fairly deep, because at one point we used to have, you know, a row of fire trucks in that one section, and they were just lined up, you know, and you started running them out the door. But that's a change. But it doesn't lend itself real well to, you know, some operations.
Mm-hmm. So it would have to be almost a special type of business that would go in there.
Yeah, something when you've got a building that's really narrow off far as street frontage and then fairly deep, you know, there are some things that work well with that, but not a lot of things.
We're on the front page today. We're talking with Moorhead Mayor David Perkins, and we'll do some more of that right after this.
There are many ways to connect with Moorhead State Public Radio. Log on to WMKY.org for enhanced regional news, on-demand audio and video, breaking news from NPR, and information on your favorite programs. Get links to Facebook and Twitter while you listen to our live broadcast online, or download mobile apps from NPR and take 90.3 FM with you everywhere. Connect with your community and Moorhead State Public Radio. Visit WMKY.org.
Welcome back to Front Page. Again, Moorhead Mayor David Perkins is our guest, and you and I talked on the phone here not too long ago about the fact that the city is getting ready for winter, That's kind of a dirty word after the winters that we've suffered through here recently. But at the same time, in reality, it has to be done. And if you read the Farmer's Almanac, which I do a little bit, they're predicting another harsh winter in our area. And that means probably a need for more road salt because the city, the county, the state, and everybody else seemed to go through a whole lot of it last year. How are you stocked for road salt, and have you ordered more?
We have the storage facility we have is pretty much full. But thanks to your question you asked me probably a month or so ago when you called about something else, we started checking what the situation was and discovered very quickly that there's a huge scarcity of road salt. And within about a week's time, we got a letter from our supplier of more than 20 years that they were no longer going to service us. Well, that gives one heart palpitations, to say the least. And what we discovered out in the market is there is, in fact, a huge shortage, not just here, but all over the Midwest and Northeast. I'm not sure why that situation is, but if you can get product at all, it's 2.5 to 3 times more than what we've been paying for it.
How much are they asking for per ton, though?
In the ballpark, $180 per ton delivered, where we were paying about $70.
So not only do you have to try to find it, but then you also have to try to find a way to pay for it.
It's like cause you to have a sharp intake of breath, like, oh, my goodness.
So you did mention, though, that your storage facility is full. How much does that hold, and do you think that you might be able to get through this winter with what you have?
It holds about 125 tons when it's completely full. We're probably 120, 125 tons. You know, that's an educated guess because, you know, in the past, a certain load size was so many tons, and it's how many loads have you got in there. But it's pretty much full. We found one supplier that's supposed to deliver us 40-some tons, but it'll be in bags and that'll on pallets, which it's harder to handle. But if we get it, we will be able to store that in a different facility, so that'll help a little if we get it.
And that's a big if, it sounds like.
It is at this point. We've also reached out to the District 9 Highway Department office in Flemingsburg, and they very generously agreed to share with us up to 100 tons if they have it to share, because they are also having issues with supply.
You think that that's due to all the demand that was placed on these salt suppliers last winter?
That's the logical conclusion. Now, there's either a real shortage or there's a manufacturer shortage, and you know that's way above my knowledge level as to what's really going on there. And apparently all over the state, because I know your wife, who's our city clerk, basically the chatter on between them has been very much the same. Does anybody know where we can get salt? And I brought this to KLC's attention a couple of weeks ago when they started checking around and found the same thing that we did. There's pretty much not anything available out there. But if what you can find is just going to be terribly expensive.
You mentioned some options here, but I guess if you can't get any, what do you do?
We're going to start the season out doing what we did at the end of last year. We're going to salt the hills and approaches to the intersections. That's your most critical areas. You know, if you just got a flat road, you're going to have to pay a little more attention because we won't have the material to take it down the bare pavement like we have in years past. You know, if we can get the intersections where you can stop without going flying through them out of control, or in the hills, which are, you know, obvious safety hazards, if we can get those areas covered, that's what we're going to do.
All right, let's move on to another topic, and this is one that you and I have bandied about before between the two of us. It's a complicated matter. It's a proposal by New City Moorhead, that group, about tax incremental funding and putting a TIF district in Moorhead somewhere, perhaps the downtown or whatever. And I guess what I will try to do now, and I'm going to be working without a net, and hopefully you'll back me up on this, is try to explain what tax incremental funding is and how it works. It's been around for a while. What it does is essentially allows a business that comes in as it builds a facility to take what it would normally spend in future property taxes and reinvest it into its infrastructure. And in that sense, the city or municipality, county or whatever, is gambling that the buildings around that particular building, their value will increase, so you get more tax revenue from those particular facilities. And because you're also getting a new business coming in, you also get the added benefit of payroll taxes, more payroll taxes. Does that sound about right to you?
That's pretty close. If we were to go and do a TIF, it's the dollars in play are the difference between where you are now and where you think you will be once this new whatever is created. So it's that spread between there, between where you are and where you think you're going to be, that's in play. That, and for our, in our case, that would include property taxes and quite probably payroll taxes. You know, it's basically a numbers game. If it looks like it will pay out what it's supposed to pay out, then fine. If it doesn't, then it was a good idea, but it didn't look like it's going to work.
So essentially it comes down to what many out in Las Vegas would call a calculated risk.
Exactly. Most of the time, the risk lies with the developer. But what we're being told is that quite often the financing people, whether it's the people that issue the bonds or buy the bonds or whatever, whatever method that's chosen to finance the project, those number crunchers will come back and say, well, this doesn't feel quite good. Is your city or your county willing to guarantee this? That's where it gets real sticky.
Because you could be on the hook.
The taxpayers could be on the hook for this, and I don't know if I don't want to put taxpayers there.
So right now, what the request was by New City Moorhead was just to basically continue to evaluate this idea, right?
They would like for us to get together, and they suggested that with the university, the hospital, and a couple other players here locally, to meet with a guy who, at the state level, who seems to have a vast knowledge of this whole process. And I think the initial step is to probably lay out an area that we might want to classify as a TIF district. Once you do that, then it's a matter of what kind of project is somebody going to do and who's going to buy into it and will the numbers actually work.
All right, last point for today. The 2015 General Assembly is looming. First pitch will be, I guess, on January the 6th, from what I've read. And again, I guess they'll be looking at the local sunset tax option. And have you had some thoughts about that, perhaps? Do you support that idea?
I do support that. It's known across the state as LIFT. Basically, it's the option where the taxpayers on the front end get to say, we want to make those choices in the form of a constitutional amendment. And then any given local project, whether it's city, county, or both, again, the taxpayers get to decide, do we want to do this, and do we want to pay, the what it costs to ride this train? So, it gives taxpayers and citizens a lot of leverage and say, I think it might have some traction this time. But who knows?
We'll see. We're out of time, Mr. Mayor. Always great to have you on the program. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Warren Mayor David Perkins, our guest on Front Page. I'm Chuck Mraz. See you next time.